welcome to the 10K Collective, my friends. Now, look, if you're listening for hacks and short-term tactics, I'm afraid you are in the wrong place. Let me tell you about the 10K Collective Mastermind. First of all, its members meet in person. They know each other well. They all make over $500,000 a year. Several make several million a year. Many have doubled their revenue over the last 18 months. If you're that kind of person, then this podcast is made for you. Today's episode is sponsored by Future State Media, experts in off-Amazon traffic for Amazon sellers. Future State Media will build you a custom-made website to deliver sales for you on Amazon. Built to grab traffic from search engines and social media, your site can be used as a secret weapon for launching products on Amazon or just to stabilize your Amazon sales. It means you can also build an email list on autopilot. Build an ultra-low-cost, long-lasting search traffic that is 100% owned by you. Go to futurestatemedia.com, where you can download your free guide to Google SEO for Amazon sellers today. Future State Media. They said, build a brand. They meant, build your own traffic. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the 10K Collective, the place for six, seven, and eight-figure Amazon sellers, and indeed, e-commerce sellers, as things develop in 2020, the line between the two is getting blurred. Today we have a very important person, an accountant with us, Alison Walker from Mint Accounting, and they're online accounting specialists with a number of Amazon seller clients and basically very good at dealing particularly with the British situation, although this episode will be useful for listeners from pretty much anywhere in the world, because we're going to talk about accounting basics and some basic mistakes that we're all making. So Alison, warm welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Lovely to see your very smart branding behind you there with Mint Accounting. How long have you been working with online sellers?
For a number of years now. So we've obviously, we're quite a young practice ourselves. We've only been around for about 10 years ourselves. But really from there, it's been all about online accounting to start with, cloud accounting. And then over the last 3-4 years, then we've started to develop but more of a niche with Amazon specific online sellers as well.
Excellent. And I presume most of your clients are based in the UK, are they, or have a sort of foot in the UK?
Yeah, the majority of them do. We do have some clients that are based in the US and Canada as well that are registered for VAT over here in the UK. So we deal with their VAT returns, using their online accounting systems as well.
It's like they said, dog is for life, not just for Christmas. It's for UK, but also Americans and Canadians who want to deal with VAT. And by the way, this is a question we could ask later in more detail, but I would suggest if you're dealing with VAT, you want a British-based accountant, because it will be meat and drink to them and a bit of a rocket science to Americans. For some reason, I've discovered over the years, Americans really struggle with VAT, and the same with sales tax. I wouldn't advise anyone to use an accountant based here for sales tax. So it's a question of getting that native savvy, isn't it? Great.
Yeah,
well, absolutely. having said that, so it's clear who you guys work for. But the episode we're going to discuss, I think, really is going to apply to any seller anywhere, because we're going to talk about some basics of accounting and some, importantly, some things, not to be negative, but to help people the most, I think, is to focus on things they're missing out and not really aware of in their business, which is always a danger, I think. So the first thing is we're going to just talk about the famous numbers around revenue and profit. Everyone's always talking revenue numbers. So in the Amazon community, it's I don't know how to put it politely on a podcast, but it's a sort of waving of appendages contest to see who's got the biggest one in the room, if I may put it that way, which is all very well and it's good fun. But there's also this thing called profit, which actually means your business has any value and is sellable and you can actually eat at night. So tell us a little bit about the importance of revenue, if there is any at all, and the importance of profit.
Okay, Nirvana, I think, you know, you kind of go back to the old saying of revenue is vanity, profit sanity, but cash is king. I think that's always a really useful one to refer back to. Businesses do always boast about their revenue. And revenue is just sales or turnover. You know, people just call it different things. But it's so different. You know, a £1 million turnover business might be selling a million items at a pound or 50,000 items at £20. And those are two incredibly different businesses. And what's really, really important, though, is the gross profit. So almost revenue is important, but what's critical in a business is your gross profit and your gross profit margin.
Okay, so let's define our terms. And I mean, first of all, let's define the term revenue a little bit more closely for Amazon sellers, because I know Greg Crabtree has views on this sort of thing. I mean, the sales or turnover, we've said, but which number should we be even using for revenue? Is it just the money that goes through your business full stop, or should it be money that somehow belongs to you more than, say, in a marketplace like Amazon? Because we often have the experience Amazon gets money and allegedly it happens, but we never get to see it as the owners of the business, right? I mean, how do you approach that one?
So for us, when we look at revenue, then we take it as the gross revenue, the top line revenue. So even though Amazon deducts some of its fees directly from the money that it pays over to you, then we still add those fees back on. So we actually see the proper sales value that you've generated. And that's your revenue. That's from an accounting point of view. That's the revenue. So we add back any of the fees that are deducted at source.
So the one thing that strikes me about revenue, and I think this is the opposite reason to what people look at it for, is I don't think it's about your significance, it's about your insignificance, meaning how big a percentage of the marketplace do you have. And I think revenue, or percentage of the total revenue that your company has as a percentage of the total in any given marketplace,
yeah.
For example, for, you know, I don't know, baby shoes or something, that I believe is a really critical metric, but I think it has nothing to do with your internal accounting. I think it's a question of how dominant you are and how much it's going to cost you to get into a space. So I think that's a different thing, isn't it? But you talked about gross margin being the most important. So this is where we start getting into those areas where people get a bit hazy about, or indeed disagree violently about what these things mean. So could you define gross margin for us as you use it at Mint Accounting?
Yeah, no bother. So for us, so if we start with gross profit, like if we're just looking at the profit levels, so that's your turnover, your sales, and then you're deducting all of the costs of the items that you've sold. So you take out your purchase costs, your Amazon advertising costs, your FBA fulfillment fees, Amazon seller fees, Amazon storage fees, etc. So these are all your costs of goods sold. So the costs relating to what you've actually sold in the business. Or they're called direct costs as well. And it's anything really that increases or decreases directly in line with the sales that you're making. Now, once you've deducted all of those, so you've got your turnover less all of these costs, then that's your gross profit. And then your gross profit margin is just simply that gross profit divided by the sales. And you can have anything, again, from gross profit margins. You know, we see businesses with gross profit margins ranging from 5% to 50, 60, 70% margins. So again, you know, these are £1 million business, £1 million turnover business. If they've got a 5% margin, then their gross profit's 50,000. If they've got a 50% gross profit margin, then their gross profit's 500,000. So the £1 million business, in one sense, doesn't really matter. It's more about the gross profit margin that you're actually generating, because that starts to dictate how well you're doing as a business.
Yeah, it's a very sobering reality check. Yeah, So the gross margin's really, really critical. So let me just go back to how you're defining your cost of goods sold, because that's quite an interesting one. There's always quite a few different things. So obviously, you've got the cost of the product.
Yeah.
And sometimes people seem to differentiate. And again, this is a question of your internal dialogue, I suppose, with yourself, but with your accountant or your team, as long as one understands what you're saying. I don't think you need to argue in a bar with Amazon sellers about this. I've literally seen this, but I'm probably the most likely candidate to be doing this, because I'm weirdly passionate about nerdy things like this. But you've got the cost of manufacturing, and you've got the cost of freight, and then any import taxes, etc., etc. Now, a lot of people will split that out at that point and call. Some people will call that cost of goods sold. I prefer to call that the landed cost. Is that the terminology you'd also use?
Yeah, we use landed cost. Okay. As well.
And then FBA fees obviously only incurred when you make a sale. So I understand the direct cost. So I remember a definition by my accountant being given that a direct cost is, you can sort of litmus test for a direct cost is that it's only incurred if you make a sale. Is that about right? Have you got another way of putting that?
I think that's spot on for it. It varies directly with sales.
Yeah, varies directly sales. Okay, interesting, which is a different nuance.
It is a wee bit different, actually,
That's thank you, that's a good clarification. Yeah, varies directly with sales. Well, and I'm probably misquoting my poor accountant. So tell me about Amazon ad cost then, because that's an interesting, wasn't it? It certainly varies. If you spend more on ads, you generally speaking get more sales. But then that's true of all advertising. But on the other hand, it's not... you could spend a lot of money on advertising and get no sales. We all know to our cost, right? So in that case, should we, and this is, you know, one of those things that varies a lot between Amazon sellers, should we be treating Amazon ads as a direct cost or an indirect cost, as in an overhead?
So I think that it comes with a wee bit of knowledge on your business as well. So if you're finding that... the more you're spending on your advertising or marketing costs, then you are seeing an increase in sales, then I would be including that as a cost of goods sold. I would have it within that category. But if you do some ad hoc advertising that's might or might not have any real impact, and you don't know whether it's going to have any real impact, then sometimes part of the advertising costs are classed as cost of goods sold, and then at other times some of them will go down into the overheads, into the expenses line. So it can vary business by business on this one as well. There's no sort of very hard and fast rule on it.
Yeah, this is why it's important to have an accountant's view as well as understanding your own business, isn't it? This is very interesting because Amazon costs are becoming an increasingly important impact on your bottom line, whether you measure it as gross margin or pre-tax profit, or indeed we need to talk about what that is. Maybe it's operating profit, the next line down. So, rule of thumb is to treat your advertising costs, and it depends what purpose you're using it for, right? I find it useful to have advertising to sales ratio per product line. And the reason I've used that is to make decisions about whether a product line itself is profitable. So from that point of view, I think it's very desirable if you can split it out as a direct cost, you know, by product line. But as you say, it's not always that easy. But thank you. That's an interesting question around that. So, okay, we've got... looked at getting the gross profit, but what's the next line down in the accounting sheet? And what does that all mean?
Okay, so next line down is your net profit. So this is before you've taken out any taxes, etc. So this is the net profit level, and it's after you've deducted all of your fixed costs, your overhead, your indirect costs. So these are things like could be rent, staff wages, accountancy fees, travel costs, etc. So these are costs that are not varying directly with your sales or your turnover, but they tend to be regular month in, month out type costs, or they can be one-off costs that again are influenced by how many items you're selling.
And the infamous one for Amazon sellers, of course, is software. And I was speaking to somebody the other day at a meeting of Amazon sellers, and they said they spend about £2,000 a month on software. So he's a pretty serious seller, and I think they are also developing some software, so I could see why they might be a bit heavy spender, but that's one to not overlook, guys, in my experience. Check how much you're spending and whether you really need it, because these things stick around. So, okay, that's fairly straightforward. So the net profit then before taxes, so obviously we've had our gross margin or gross profit, we've taken off the overheads. Tell me a bit more about this. People throw around the term EBITDA a lot. Is this really an important metric, or is it sort of a bit artificial for a small business?
So it's useful. So EBITDA is your earnings before your interest, before your tax, before your depreciation and amortization. And it's used, it's a fairly good approximation to the cash generation of your business. So if you think about it, within your overheads, then depreciation is quite an artificial cost within your accounts. It's not cash that's going out of the business. So depreciation is where you've invested in an asset. It could be your Apple Mac or suite of laptops that you have. So you've got these are sitting in the balance sheet, and then you depreciate them on a monthly basis through your profit and loss, but it's not cost going out of the business. So EBITDA is really a fair approximation of the cash being delivered by your business. And it's used when we're valuing a business, and we value based on EBITDA.
By the way, we ought to talk about amortization, because people always put it in the end. Lots of people throw the word EBITDA around and they know what it stands for. But what does amortization mean?
So amortization is really about, it's more related to intangible assets. And it's really similar to depreciation. You know, it's the same idea as depreciation. Depreciation is where you've got a physical asset and you're spreading the cost of that physical asset into your accounts, but amortization is spreading the cost of an intangible asset, and that could be goodwill if you've purchased a business in the past and you've got the purchase cost of that business sitting in your balance sheet, and then you're spreading that cost into the profit and loss account as you go over a number of years, or trademarks. Can be classed as an intangible asset and be amortised into the profit and loss account as well.
So I guess for a lot of people then, the trademark or some intellectual property might be a cost of, I don't know, say it's I think like £1,200 to get a European trademark done via lawyers. I mean, you could get it done a lot cheaper if you DIY it, but let's say that you spent £1,200 on a trademark across the EU, which at the time of broadcast is probably still possible. Not quite sure. It's February 2020. So let's assume you did that. And then how long would you amortize a trademark cost for? It's a bit obscure, but since we're there.
I think you have to take a view on it. So if your trademark gives you protection for 10 years, then you could realistically spread that in fairly small amounts, £10 a month over 10 years, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a lot if you just got the one trademark for a brand, but if you're trademarking by product line, I guess it could be, look, it's more money we can protect against the tax man. It just struck me that I'm sure most people aren't even thinking of doing that unless their accountant's really sharp. Anyway, a small thing to explore with your accountant, I think. So you're saying EBITDA is important because it's about the cash generation of your business, because I get that, depreciation, if my Mac is now worth like half of what it was when I bought it 2 years ago, but no more cash has gone out of the door. So it hasn't affected the cash. However, what about interest? Because that always struck me as a weird thing to take back out, because interest very, very much does impact my cash in my experience. Yeah. What's the justification for taking the interest out?
So usually, when you're looking at EBITDA, then it is almost always used when you're looking at the value of a business. And when you start to look at the financing of the business, so the interest costs, what's needed to finance the business, when you're a buyer of a new business, then you're separately looking at how you're going to finance that business. So the interest itself really looked at in a separate sense when you're looking at the balance sheet and the financing of the business. So it's deducted out of the overall profit and loss account on that basis, because these aren't, if somebody new was buying your business, then they would not necessarily have the same level of interest going through the profit and loss account as you do just now, whereas most of the other costs of running that business would stay fairly consistent.
Yeah, that makes sense. I suppose if you're in America, then you'd be lucky enough to be able to take out an SBA loan, and you can have maybe a huge interest chunks going out of the business every month because you've bought the business largely on credit or, you know, leveraged or whatever, leveraged buyout. That's not quite the same, actually. But anyway, so yes, okay, that makes sense. Thank you. So, okay, so EBITDA is kind of a fun thing, but not necessarily that practical for people who are running the business day to day. So it's more about the net profit before taxes. And is pretty much the same as EBITDA then? Net profit before tax, EBITDA, that pretty much interchangeable?
No.
No. Great. Good. That's not really. A useful thing. So tell us more.
So again, your net profit is after you've deducted your depreciation, after you've deducted your interest, any amortization. So it's what a business owner needs to look at when they're looking at the profitability of their business. Because no matter that we've said depreciation is sort of an artificial cost in the business, however, when it's your business and you're running it, you know exactly what you've just said there. You know that you've invested in these assets and the asset value is dropping down year in and year out, and therefore part of the cost to reflect that use of those assets is shown in your profit and loss account. So when you're looking at your own business, then net profit's what we look at. Net profit's what I look at when I'm looking at my business.
I guess that brings us really to another question, which is slightly out of the order we discussed, but the obvious thing, which is asset value and the relationship between that and profit and loss and cash, because obviously they're not the same thing. And I think the depreciation thing, which for most of us is the most obvious thing that we see actually turning up on our balance sheets and profit and loss accounts, it's a non-cash movement, but nevertheless, it's in the profit and loss account, which gives us a bit of a hint, doesn't it? That profit and loss is not all about cash. So tell me, I mean, this brings us really to one of the classic mistakes you said that new business owners make, which is mixing up, kind of understanding profit and loss to a degree, but mixing that up with a balance sheet and then with cash flow. So tell me a little bit about the sort of classic errors that happen in that area.
What often happens is you go off and make your purchases and you've spent £50,000 on your manufacturing costs and you're waiting for them to arrive in the UK. So what you have there is you've put all of this cash, taken it out of your bank and spent it with your manufacturer, with your supplier. So then when you're looking at it, so that then comes in as stock. When you get your purchase invoice, that shows as stock in your balance sheet. And it's only then when you actually sell those items that the cost of those items move through into your profit and loss account. So everything's interlinked, obviously. You know, you do have very different the balance sheet, the profit and loss is obviously all integral to each other, but everything is very separate in the way that you look at it. So you look at your profit and loss account and you've sold 20 of those 2,000 items and your profit looks really healthy from your profit and loss account, but you've no cash. Because all of that cash is tied up in the other 1,980 items that are sitting in stock in your balance sheet. So it's this, one's telling you about how profitable the business is, but your cash is dealt with in the balance sheet. And if you're investing your cash in stock, then you have, you know, cash can deplete very, very quickly when it's all tied up in stock.
You think you just put your finger on an extremely basic but important point, which is from the balance sheet point of view, as I understand it, and do correct me if I'm going wrong, because this is maybe a classic error, but cash and current assets, i.e. stock, for example, would be interchangeable in value. So if I spend £50,000 now and I have £50,000 worth of widgets tomorrow, then the profit and loss of the business hasn't changed. The value of the business hasn't changed. But for sure, my cash position has changed considerably. So yeah, that's a very good point. So what's the solution to this? And obviously, we've got to deal with cash flow in a separate way. I mean, what's a simple beginning to dealing with this in a more grounded way?
So I think it's gaining the understanding of what it is you're doing. You know, I think you do have to really get to grips with what a balance sheet is telling you and what your profit and loss account is telling you. And I think that a lot of business owners are really comfortable with how a profit and loss account is laid out. You know, it's a relatively straightforward set of numbers to look at. But I think that people often struggle a bit more when it comes to looking at the balance sheet. But spending the time, talking to your accountant as well, and just spending the time understanding what your balance sheet is telling you and how to use your balance sheet, it is such a valuable lesson to learn. Whatever type of business you run, understanding your balance sheet is really critical.
Okay, so let's try and skip some of those conversations with the accountant, because we've got one here right now. What if I were coming to you as a client then? Let's make me a mock client, and we say, okay, so this balance sheet business, what is it important? If so, why do I even need to understand that? Isn't that just a thing for accountants?
Yes, so I always look at a balance sheet first. It's my go-to place when I look at a balance sheet. And what it is telling you is, you know, you started off with, it shows you what your fixed assets are and what the value is. Net book value of those fixed assets are. So that's after the depreciation. So you can see that if you've spent £1,000 on IT equipment 2 years ago, then that only might be shown in your balance sheet now at £600. So you can see what the value, sort of putting it in inverted commas, but the value of those assets are. It's an approximation. Then you're looking at the stock that you have, the cash on hand that you have, any money that's owed to you. So that's debtors, any cash that's owed to you. And then from that, then you can actually look at what your liabilities are, what money the company, the business owes out. So that can be what you've got to pay in VAT, what you've got to pay in tax, what you've got to pay suppliers that you've not yet paid. And then all of that together, there might as well be in there, you might have loans in the business, and you might have loans that have got to be paid, or you can see how much is needing to be paid over the next 12 months. And you can see how much is needing to be paid over the next, you know, you might have a 10-year loan in there. So your balance sheet gives you all of that information, and the very sort of bottom line of that balance sheet is the net assets that you have. So that's all of your assets less all of your liabilities. And again, that's another good indicator when it comes to looking at value of the business. And you obviously you want to always be in a net asset position and not in a net loss position, or you know, you want to have it as a positive number. You know, your assets are more than your liabilities, but it gives you lots and lots of information about how well your business is performing.
Okay, so yeah, that's one of the reasons that I'm making it my mission this year to try and educate myself about how to learn to read balance sheets properly, because I think it's something I keep hearing more and more from business brokers and accountants. And it's interesting that business brokers, even if one has no technical interest in accounting, I'm nerdy enough to have a bit of interest, which is a bit strange, but I shouldn't say that to accountant, but I think it's the language of business. And I think accounting is just, it's one of those things that you have to, even if all you want to do is see dollar signs and get rich, that I think if it comes to the fact that it affects the value of your business, then that's really a reason to take interest. And I can think of one business owner, for example, who is very meticulous in many ways, done a beautiful job with his products. He's a very, very nice chap as well. And he's great with people, and he's got a wonderfully slick system for hiring and training VAs. And when it came to his books, I think he had a bit of a shock recently when he went to get his business valued, and it was just less valuable than he thought. I mean, and it's fine, he's made a decision not to sell for now, and that's perfectly fine. But I think the reason it was a shock is because his financials were in a mess before. So I suppose what I'm saying is, I'm just banging the drum for accounting and the importance of it. It's not just an abstract thing that you deal with at tax time. It also affects your future wealth if you want to sell the business. And a lot of people do sell these businesses, right? This is not an abstract idea. This is one of the ways that people realize the value. So, okay. So what would you say then are, where do we even go from here? I guess in the end, you do have to sit down with your accountant. What would you say are the most overlooked and most important numbers on the balance sheet? You've talked about the net assets.
Yeah.
What are the other sort of classic balance sheet errors, maybe another way of putting it?
I think it's sort of keeping track in terms of your cash side of things as well. So you can always, when you're looking at your balance sheet, so, you know, if we're talking about having your online accounts available to you, so, you know, we're Xero accountants, QuickBooks, Free Agents, there's a whole host of different online accounting packages. If you start to get used to looking at the information that you can get from your accounting package, and you start to look at your balance sheet, then what you're looking for then is you're looking for trends. You know, you start to look at making sure that your accountant is estimating what your corporation tax is going to be, so you can see as early as you possibly can what your tax liabilities are looking like. It lets you keep an eye on what your VAT liability is looking like. You know, it's always nice when you see if you're paying off a loan, it's always nice to see that value coming down on a month in, a month out basis, and you know that you're sort of getting to the point where loans are starting to be paid off. But then other times, you know, you want to look at your balance sheet and understand when you do have a cash shortage and you have got all your cash tied up in stock, for example, then, you know, having a strong balance sheet goes a long way to getting funding as well. You know, obviously Amazon do loans directly, but, you know, if you want to go to a more traditional bank or you'll often use Capitalise or, you know, a lending broker, then again, they look at the balance sheet. Profit and loss is one thing, but they do assess your balance sheet for a strength, you know, to make sure your net assets, to make sure you have decent and improving net assets.
Excellent. I know that we've got a few ratios that you mentioned as well. We're going to deal with this at some other point, but I think that it might be appropriate to bring in. I know that the quick ratio is often seen as quite an important one. Just tell us a couple of things that you might want to keep monitoring on your balance sheet, apart from anything else, because a bank would look at it when they come to assess whether they're going to lend you money or not.
So the quick ratio, I think, is a really, really useful ratio, and it's one to monitor, like to get used to it, get used to having a look at what your quick ratio is. And what you're looking at there is what your cash balance is, and you're adding in anything that's owed to you. So this could be what Amazon have still got to pay you, or if you're trading across multiple different platforms, it could be that you invoice for your items or you sell online through your website. So it's your cash plus all your receivables, anything that's owed in to you, and then you're dividing that by all of your liabilities. And what you're really looking at there, it's looking to see if what you can turn into cash very quickly, so your actual physical cash and your the money that's owed to you, is enough to cover and pay all of your short-term debt, all of your current liabilities. So, you know, ideally, you would want that to be one and above, but I think it's more important to pay attention to the trend. You know, so again, you want to be looking at this type of information, tracking it on a monthly basis, so that you're, you know, it's a dead easy KPI to put together, but you want to look at it on a month in, month out basis. And it just becomes second nature then. You just get used to understanding how your business is performing, and it's a quick indicator, you know, if your cash balances are going down, or if you're seeing an ever-increasing liability for VAT, etc. And what would be nice is to have a nice steady increasing quick ratio as well. You know, that's a good sign of business growth over a period as well.
So this is all interesting stuff. And what strikes me is that the way you treat accounts seems to feel to me like if you're a professional driver, that you would treat the gauges on the digital readout if you've got a more expensive car in front of you. So it's not just about the speed, which I guess is like revenue, but it's about, you know, the how fast the engine's good, depending on how good the dials are on your car, you know, how much the engine's over revving. Which gear you're in, whether the oil temperature is off, whether the engine temperature is a bit high. So it feels like you're looking for trends. It's like, you know, if I'm driving along, for example, and the temperature gauge suddenly starts going up quite swiftly, then that's a hint that I might stop and investigate, or if it's even bad, take it to my mechanic. And I suppose that's a slightly different relationship than... So you're seeing it as a whole with the sort of little dials that may be moving, and if they move too much, you take a moment to investigate, rather than seeing it as a massive 50,000 figures that's so boring or so mind-blowing that you just hand it off to an accountant and say, yeah, you deal with it, right? So it strikes me that you've got that kind of, you summarize things into a few particularly important things you keep an eye on a sort of dashboard almost.
And I think that happens a lot as well. You know, business owners, some people are nerdy and like a whole page of numbers and like to look at that level of detail, but other people don't. You know, other people can, you know, get far more out of seeing a graph and seeing trends over time on a graph, or seeing a set of percentages rather than absolute figures. You know, and I think it just, you have to find what works for you. But it is a bit about really getting to grips with the key numbers that work for you and how you run your business.
It does make sense. And actually, some people like percentages, right, rather than... absolute figures, sorry. As ever, folks, by the way, I'm tapping away here, making a lot of noise, so forgive me, but I'm just making sure that I capture some of these things, particularly when it comes to financial matters. I think it can be useful to have some written stuff, so you'll find that at 10kcollective.com. And we'll also set up a special page for Mint Accounting and Alison at 10kcollective.com/mint, M-I-N-T, if you were struggling with that. So, yeah, it's an important one to think about how you're going to absorb it. And that strikes me in all areas of business, but particularly accounting, is that, as you said, in the end, it's two very personal things, which is, number one, knowing your own business a bit, and number two, knowing yourself. So if you're a visual person, you have graphs. If you like percentages, you do that. If you're very detail-oriented, that you... communicate with your accountant the level of detail that you want to see, because that varies just quite massively in my experience as well. Let's talk about some more crass mistakes that people make in the earlier stages, but nevertheless they're common enough that I think we need to address them. First of all, setting up as a sole trader and using your personal accounts. I know this is an obvious no-no, but why is it particularly important to not do these things?
It's one of my pet hates, I have to say. So, you know, setting up a sole trader is okay. But lots of people start trading, don't think about having a separate bank account, and just merely use their own personal bank account. Then when it comes to handing everything over to us as their accountants, then, you know, we've got to trawl through all of that individual's purchases from Tesco or direct debit for their TV license, etc. You know, like, it's all very interesting, but really not necessary for us to see all of that. It's difficult to then pick out what are actual business costs and what, you know, is separate out from all of the personal expenses that person has. So if you're setting up as a sole trader, which is never really my favourite way to set up a business, but if you do, get a business bank account set up straight away and keep your personal finances separate from your business finances. It just makes everything far easier. And it does, it means as well that should you ever have an HMRC compliance check or VAT inspection, if you're using your personal account, your personal bank account, then you're going to have to give all of that information over to HMRC, which is most people wouldn't really be that keen and given all of that information about every single penny that was spent over the last 12 months over to HMRC. So just keep them separate. It's far easier for everybody if you do it like that. Run it like a business.
Yeah, run it like a business. I'm into that. And by the way, HMRC, if you're an American listening, is the equivalent of IRS or anyone else listening around the world. It's the tax authorities, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. The Queen does not personally come around and visit you, I have to say. Either it's not that pleasant. So you're absolutely right that why would you give more access to the tax man to your accounts than you want? I mean, it's not a great idea, because if your business accounts are reasonably in order and your personal ones are a mess, that's going to make all sorts of trouble for you. So here you are on that one. So now let's talk a little bit more about those who you know feel a bit more sophisticated because they've formed a limited company, which, by the way, in the UK is alarmingly easy. If you're in any other tax jurisdictions, it takes about an hour online to fill in the boxes, and it costs about, I think, £13 or something. So under $20, it's amazing, and you're there within 4 hours. So it's not a complex thing to set up, I would say, from my personal experience. Obviously, an accountant is a great person to use if you have any doubts about that, more than a lawyer, because they'd be much more affordable and they're normally very versed in that. So now let's talk about some of the mistakes, though. Once people feel like they're acting like sophisticated company directors, what sort of things do people start doing? I know that one of your pet hates is they see a nice bank balance and they just start taking cash out. Why is that bad?
Yeah. So again, like, I think that's, you know, it's almost the opposite of what we were talking about in terms of tying your cash up in stock. This is where, you might be sitting in a nice position where you've paid all your suppliers. Great. You're doing well. Business is making a nice profit. And you've got, £30,000 sitting in your bank account. And it happens, it does happen, particularly when people are new to limited companies, new to being a director of a limited company, that they see that they've got £30,000 and think that they can take £30,000 out of the bank and treat it as dividends or, they really do. They think they're declaring dividends at that point in time. But it's not, you know, we're back to this. The cash that's in the bank is not the same as the profit for the company. And what you really need to have is whatever your profit is, then we have to allow for corporation tax from that. So in the UK, that's 19% of your profits in the business. And it's only after you've deducted your corporation tax, then the remaining money that's there, the remaining profit that's there, is then allowed to be declared as a dividend. And we see it over and over again. People just take too much money out of their business, get to the end of the year, and they end up with what's called an overdrawn director's loan account. And we've not got, there's not enough profit after tax to allow us to declare dividend to cover all of that. So they end up owing their limited company the money that they've taken out, or the extra of the money that they've taken out. It is, it can be a really difficult area, and it takes a bit of getting used to understand how much you can take out of the business on a month-by-month basis. But again, if you're using any of the online accounting packages, so if you're using Xero or QuickBooks or FreeAgent or any of the packages, then as long as you know that your accountant is allowing for the corporation tax, then you're getting used to looking at your net profit after tax, then that gives you a good indicator of what you can declare as a dividend and how much you can take out of the business. So, just speak to your accountant, avoid the trouble of getting it wrong. Just get it right from the beginning.
Yeah, and so it's a basic point, again, the difference between cash and... It seems like that's the theme of the day, is the difference between cash and profit. Again, this is like the flip side of it. As you said, just because there's cash there doesn't mean there's profit. Just because the balance sheet shows there's no profit or loss doesn't mean there hasn't been a change in cash. I mean, they're different things. Yeah. So, and yeah, as you said, the basic rule of thumb I'm taking from that is you cannot pay out dividends except out of profit. The amount of cash you happen to have in your bank is irrelevant from that point of view. So, and I know that the tax situation is very different if you take dividends out versus salaries. We better talk about that briefly as well. So dividends are taxed at, what is it, 20% these days or something like that in the UK at the time of speaking, like, you know, sort of on the horizon.
So dividends, dividends actually start from a tax at 7%. So we have a really low rate of tax on dividends just now. It changes all the time. You know, this will change again, I'm sure, when we have the budget in March as well. But the tax on dividends is lower than the tax on salary, basically. So paying yourself using a combination of salary and dividends in the UK can be quite tax efficient as a way to operate a limited company.
So are there points at which I've heard that the HMRC starts to look a little bit askance at you? They look at you and they think, we may investigate if you start just taking dividends and you don't take a salary, even though you're obviously working as pretty much the full-time director or part-time director of the company. Is that a thing that you've encountered, or is it good to just mostly just take dividends and pay a lot less tax?
So the standard approach tends to be that directors will take up to the personal allowance threshold, generally, sometimes a bit below that, as salary, because, you know, up to that point it's all, there's no tax to pay when you've got a personal allowance at £12,500. You can take up to that level and not pay any tax. And then over and above that, business owners tend to take dividend from the business after that. And do they look at it? Yeah, I think they probably do. I think that HMRC don't necessarily like it to be set up like that, but it's a legal way of structuring your business. It's your business. You're allowed to decide what salary level you take, and you're allowed to reward yourself with dividends. So, you know, until HMRC change those rules, which I'm sure they probably will do, you know, they are always trying to have everybody, you know, pay the same levels of tax, no matter how you're structured. So I imagine over time, the attractiveness of dividends will reduce again. It hasn't, you know, it's already reduced, but I think that'll happen again as we, you know, go into the next few years.
Yeah, well, without getting political, the UK government's going to have some source of money, isn't it, if it cuts itself off from the world? And so I suspect tax rates will be going up somewhere, and people are always making promises about not putting up taxes and putting them up. So any promises from politicians on that regard are normally worth taking with a truck full of salt. So nevertheless, it's good to know, and this is very UK-specific, so we'll move out of that, guys, in a sec. Sorry, if you're listening in America, we'll move on. But even if you are in the States or Canada, or wherever else, Australia, Germany, the classic places where our listeners are, it's worth really thinking these things through, whatever in your tax jurisdiction the case may be. These are matters you should discuss with your accountant, because tax probably is going to be your single biggest expense, and most people just kind of treat it as an afterthought. So you really should be talking to your accountant, I think, is another theme of the day, right? Now, let's come back to this thing. You were just talking about the fact that people don't account for their tax liability in their profit and loss, and thus start taking money out. What are some simple solutions for making sure that you do keep an eye on that, if you don't want to get into too much complexity with your software or your accountant? Is there a sort of simple way to just separate out your VAT and corporate tax liability?
And I think it's one of these ones that, you know, we advise clients all the time to look at this, that it really, when you're running a business, you need to have at least two business bank accounts. You know, one that operates as your day-to-day account, your current account, and that's, you know, your income's coming into there, your turnover's coming in there, and you're paying out your suppliers from that account. But then having a separate account as well that allows you to set aside funds for paying your corporation tax, paying your VAT, making savings for the business as well. But get it out of your day-to-day running account. So you're not tempted then to dip into that second account, to pay a supplier. So just sort of getting into the habit of, again, if you're looking at your profit and loss account or looking at your balance sheet, getting into the habit of looking at what your VAT liability is and trying to set at least something towards your VAT liability on a month-by-month basis into the second account, assuming that your corporation tax has been accrued for or been accounted for in your balance sheet as well, set that amount aside into the second account so you've got the funds there at the beginning and you're not struggling at the time when those liabilities become due.
Yeah, and it strikes me a lot of this stuff is about having discipline, really, which is a very dull word for crazy entrepreneurial types. But I think it's just so important because you can get into hot water quite quickly with all this stuff. I mean, in between running out of cash and getting the HMRC investigating you, neither or any tax authorities, IRS probably be even worse. But yeah, these are not good alternatives, so it's got to be done. So just the final basic sort of non-Amazon specific thing, and then we're going to be talking in the next episode about some Amazon specific issues. What's the difference between accounting and bookkeeping? Because obviously there are a lot of numbers to keep an eye on. Bookkeepers can be people in the Philippines for a few dollars an hour. Accountants tend to be expensive. And if you're in the US, you're best off to have one in your US, but maybe even the state you're in. If you're in the UK, you're best off having one there. So it's harder to outsource that to a cheaper place. So what is the difference? Because I think it's going to be very important to be able to efficiently allocate stuff to bookkeepers who can do that, but also to keep stuff for accountants who, need to do accountant stuff. So is there a difference, in fact? Is this an artificial question?
No, not at all. I think that, bookkeepers are the processors within the business or externally. So they're the ones making sure that your bank is reconciled, that your purchase invoices are in your accounting package, that your sales are all recorded properly in your accounting package. So they're very much focused on the day-to-day transactional part of the business. I think what you're looking for with an accountant is they're the one, hopefully, you're looking at a qualified accountant as well. Accountant's such a generic term these days, but you want to look for somebody who has actually got qualifications in accountancy, who are able to look at making sure that your accounts are prepared properly, that you've got your accruals, your prepayments, that you're handling your stock properly, that your VAT has been recorded properly. And they're able to advise you on and educate you as well on, we're back to this understanding what your numbers are actually showing you about your business. It's this, you want somebody who's able to speak in your language to you about how to understand your business from these numbers and help you set targets, help you set goals, look at your margins, look at your trends with you, and really pull together the information that you need to run your business. And that tends to be the role of the accountant at that point. But also, your accountant's the one who's going to be submitting your statutory accounts, your corporation tax returns, your VAT returns, running your payroll. They're doing all the interaction with government bodies, HMRC, your company's house. But you really want to have somebody who's advising you and making sure that you do understand how to use the financial information that's available to you.
absolutely agree with that from my experience as an entrepreneur, sort of still wrestling with my accounts, I think. So a couple of things to say. I mean, yeah, before you set your accounts up, my experience was that using Xero or QuickBooks, there's still quite a lot of account setup to do, even though it comes sort of pre-populated with some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I found that getting that done with my accountant was really helpful. Otherwise, if you employ a bookkeeper and then the whole system is being run by an amateur idiot, i.e. me in that case, I was just smart enough to know when I was dumb, like, I have no idea, please help me set this up. But otherwise, you're going to end up with a complete mess. And however good the bookkeeper is, they're not going to be able to help you. So I really think it's critical to get an accountant involved when you set up the accounts. And then the other thing is, I really, the education and advising thing, exactly why we've got you on the show, because I just think if you don't understand the numbers, it's kind of a waste of time having them anyway. I mean, yes, HMRC, you make sure you have them, but yeah. Management accounts that management doesn't understand are kind of meaningless or doesn't look at. And apparently, you know, I've heard various accountants tell me, look, trust me, some people in some pretty big corporations, like, they should really know about this stuff. They don't read the accounts, or if they do, they really don't understand them. So, you know, don't feel ashamed, but ask your accountant dumb questions is what I would say. That's what I've been doing today. And by the way, just a quick shout out to the guys at Link My Books. If you're using Xero or QuickBooks and you are an Amazon seller, which obviously would be the majority of people listening, I think, then linkmybooks.com is really, I think it's .com, it's Link My Books, is a very, very handy piece of software because it is geared to the European and UK situation specifically as well. So they will deal with all sorts of international marketplaces, including the States. But they do actually cope with VAT, which most other things like A2X or what have you is not really geared to that. So very good thing. I know, Alison, that you've worked with those guys a bit, right? Tell us a little bit about how that works. Just briefly plug that.
Absolutely love Link My Books. It's been a revelation for us. They basically take your Amazon data and make it usable and easy to get into Xero or QuickBooks. And, you know, once you've done the setup can take it's not onerous. And the guys at Link My Books have templated the setup as well. Once you've got all the VAT rates correct in there, and you've set up your linkage between Xero and Link My Books, then it's fairly seamless. They settle all of the data from Amazon into your Xero accounting or your QuickBooks accounting on a day-by-day basis or week-by-week basis, and they can do it at SKU level or at product group level. So it's really, really useful, really useful information.
Yeah, that's great. And it's nice that you've worked with them and that they've been willing to work with you to make sure that what their software does is exactly geared to the needs of accountants and the business owners.
Absolutely.
That's great. I mean, I know Dan and Pete pretty well. And so, yeah, I'm happy. I haven't got any affiliate deal with them. I should have. I should give them a ring, actually. But they really are kosher guys. So, and they've both sold Amazon businesses, I think. And they both run Amazon businesses. So they really have walked the talk. So they're great guys to trust. And I think that neatly brings me to our final point that I would like to make, which is that in a way, it's about having a business-like mentality and a structured approach to things. I think in accounts, more than anything else, is one of the areas where how can I put this? If you think that you only need to hire an accountant to do your tax returns, you're thinking in sort of transactionally or working in the business. If you're thinking about creating a business as a system, then the most important thing is to A, understand what's going on, and then B, create systematic ways of doing things. Because in the end, if you use somebody like QuickBooks, Link My Books, and Alison to set up the system properly, then A, your bookkeeper will have like a quarter of the work to do, and B, the results will be meaningful. So I just think that it's about being very, very structured and understanding what you're paying for. You're not paying for somebody to do the grunt work that you don't want to do. You're paying for clarity, I think, in the end. What you're doing is, from come back to my favorite metaphor of the day, is you're paying for somebody to construct a dashboard on your car, because otherwise you're looking at the engine and you can hear it screaming and you know something's wrong, but you have no idea whether it's because you're too fast or, you know, you're in the wrong gear, or you have no idea what's going on. So I think that clarity is just critical, particularly in a capital-based business where I've seen some nasty car crashes. So please speak to your accountant. Yeah. Is what I would say, like the BBC kind of, you know, yeah, safety advice. If you have been challenged by things on this program today, then, you know, get in touch with the medical professional. In this case, get in touch with the financial professional. So, Alison, how do people get hold of you if they want to consider working with you or get some advice?
They can email me directly. That would be no problem at all. So my email address is Alison with two L's at mintaccounting.co.uk. And you can see us on, like, you know, our website's mintaccounting.co.uk, or on Facebook, etc. as well. So anyway.
Fantastic. So Alison, thank you very much for sharing some very good down-at-home wisdom and some very useful things that hopefully will save a lot of people a lot of grief down the line as well if they implement it.
No problem at all.
Today's episode is sponsored by Future State Media, experts in off-Amazon traffic for Amazon sellers. Future State Media will build you a custom-made website to deliver sales for you on Amazon. Built to grab traffic from search engines and social media, your site can be used as a secret weapon for launching products on Amazon or just to stabilize your Amazon sales. It means you can also build an email list on autopilot. Build an ultra low cost, long lasting search traffic that is 100% owned by you. Go to futurestatemedia.com where you can download your free guide to Google SEO for Amazon sellers today. Future State Media. They said, build a brand. They meant, build your own traffic.